Hello, this is FEPS Talks, the podcast series of FEPS, the Foundation for European Progressive Studies, which is located in Brussels. But today I'm in Berlin to meet a very good friend, Matthias Kollatz, who used to be vice president of the European Investment Bank at the same time when I was a board member of the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development. So we have an overlapping period working on multinational and international investment questions. But subsequently, he was the financial senator of the city of Berlin until a few years ago. So he is a very experienced expert about finance, investment, and especially public investment, which is a critical question of our time. Public investment is a concept that probably has changed a lot in the last 15 years. To use a new expression, which was coined by Chancellor Scholz, Zeitenwende, I think we can say that 15 years ago there was a financial Zeitenwende because of the great financial crisis. Everybody recognized that excessive financial liberalization was at the heart of the crisis which we went through. And the model had to change. And this transition to something new was indeed about putting public financial institutions, investment banks, into the center of the policy, at least more than before. So my first question to Matthias is, to what extent this transition has been completed? Has public finance fulfilled its potential or its mandate since we experienced the crisis?
It has not. It's not the mission is not done. But a lot of progress is there, and you mentioned it already. Before the big financial crisis, the common talk was that regulation stops innovation in the financial sector, and that there is no regulation needed, and the private banks were much in favor of what they call self-regulation. And we all have learned that this didn't work. So we have more regulation. We have also regulation as something which is partly stopping innovation, because innovation is sometimes reckless. And we have seen also that regulation is needed to stop tax evading practices in banks, like we have seen them with Cum-Ex and Cum-Cum and others. So progress is there. And we have seen, and this was where I had the honor to contribute to, that there is now a new wave of founding of, I would say, promotional banks. Mm-hmm. So was a discussion rather that we don't need a big EIB, a European Investment Bank, at the moment of time when I joined the EIB. Now it's rather about, could the EIB not do more? Is it not better to do more with promotional banks? A lot of countries created promotional banks or increased the volume of activities. Also, some of the new member states, where I had the honor to support a little bit, mm-hmm. were creating promotional banks. So, and this is not anymore an annex of the banking sector. Mm-hmm. It's now an definitive part of the banking sector, and in countries like Germany it's a strong part. Mm-hmm. So there we have the situation that the KfW, the National Promotional Bank, is one of the biggest banks of the whole country, and practically each of the regions has also a promotional bank example given here in Berlin. We call it IBB, Investitionsbank Berlin. So, and why this is important, because there the idea is not going with a maximization of profits. It's going for maximization of investments with certain purposes. So now maybe more climate transition than it was in the past. But also in the past, it was always a lot on social housing. It is a lot also on supporting small and medium-sized enterprises, on support of innovation. Innovation is not only depending on grants. So this is what promotional banks can do and should do.
You refer to the problem of deregulation when you spoke about the pre-crisis times. Sometimes, for the sake of teaching, I say that in that period, there was too much innovation in the private sector and not enough innovation in the public financial sector. Agreed. Would you agree with this?
Agreed, yes.
If we look ahead from the very turbulent times of the crisis, at the European Union level, indeed, there were some interesting innovations. They typically came in 2014 and after, when the so-called Juncker Commission took over. And they launched the so-called Juncker Plan. A part of that was a European fund for strategic investment. Was this adequate, or was this sufficient to address the crisis and the needs of a recovery, especially?
It was a right step in the right mm-hmm. direction, but I would not say it was sufficient. I will try to explain it. It was not coming out of the blue. Even beforehand was a discussion about the structural funds, regional mm-hmm. funds and others, that it does not make sense only to give them as grants. Mm-hmm. That one is buying into the experience of the so-called Marshall Plan, a plan after the Second World War, that it makes sense to create revolving funds. This was called financial instruments. An increasing share of the regional funds was also going this route. But this was the first step. Then the first programs, this was called on European level RSFF, on innovation financing via loans, were established in a cooperation of the Commission and the EIB. And this was now, if you so want, really scaled up with the Juncker Plan. And the idea behind Juncker Plan was, the budget is already done. Mm-hmm. And we want now to do more on investments. So let's do it with financial instruments, because mm-hmm. we need to rely less on budgetary money for this. So this was a right step. And it was also scaling up these activities. The Juncker Plan was going with a guarantee program. And now we have with InvestEU also a guarantee program. But it is, if you look at the size, it is not sufficient, because the European budget is altogether relatively small. And either one increases the size of the budget at the EU level significantly, or one agrees on that there has to be much activity in respect to investment in the member states. So if you so want, we have a lot of member states which are more or less round about net investment zero, and it should be much more given the challenges. We need more investment in innovation, we need more investment in climate transition, and we need more investment in things like housing and social infrastructure. And by the way, this can be done, also social housing can be done always with loans, because it's in the long term, it's paying back. And this mm-hmm. is one advantage of the approach with promotional banks, because they can deal with loans over 40, 50 years. And this has been proven after the Second World War successfully.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that the EU budget is relatively small, and that's one of the reasons why these types of innovations to scale up and to foster public and private funding cooperation is somehow necessary. I think this goes back to the times when the EU started to launch this family of Jessica, Jaspers and various other beautiful instruments. Do you think this is a kind of kindergarten which then should enter the schooling age and develop something much greater? Or we would need to solve differently the investment needs of the current European Union, either by, the adults like EIB, EBRD, or going for a complete revamping of fiscal rules and giving some kind of privileged treatment of investments, various types of investments, when it comes to the accounting of public spending.
Maybe there is not a good golden bullet everywhere, so it makes sense to go for an appropriate mix. I try to make clear that there is space for going with long-term loans and other financial instruments with promotional banks on a higher level than it's done now. But it's also clear that the fiscal rules are not so supportive. In Germany, we have the Schuldenbremse. In other countries, we have different but sometimes similar things. And at the EU level, we have this what is called six-pack, which is has now there was some reform, but it was quite clear, and it was also said by the member states very clearly by the council that there will be no exceptions from the six-pack for the investment needs of climate change. And just to make it clear, for a climate neutral Germany, one would need until 2045 or 2050, one needs investments about 5,000 billion. And with the normal budgets, we can make maybe something like 3,100 billion. With the promotional banks as they are, we can do maybe another 800 or 900 billion, but there still is something to do, which adds only for one country like Germany up to another 1,000 billion over the next two decades. And for this, one has to find instruments. This could come with new rules. This is, I think, what you hint with your questions. And for the moment, I don't see the political majorities for this. Maybe it will come, but for the moment, it's not there. But if it's not there, then it makes sense to look what is possible in the given framework. And there, certainly, everything which goes with financial instruments has not these strict limitations as if you so want, grant programs or classical budget behavior. And this would open a window to address at least most of this investment gap. Mm-hmm. But what is quite clear, we need a higher level of investment to cope with the climate change. What is good is that financial instruments are useful and adequate for this, because these investments more or less will pay off in the long run. Mm-hmm. So they are not profitable in the year one. And so that's why one needs very low interest rates or maybe also a component of grant in combination. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, most of the investments we are talking about will pay off. Mm-hmm. So making housing less CO2 with less CO2 emissions, or creating kind of a new gas grid for H2. This all makes sense, but it also makes in the long run economically sense. Mm-hmm. And so this is where we have a lack of instruments. And certainly the fiscal rules also at the EU level are not very helpful. Mm-hmm. This because they basically exclude the climate change investments, which are the bulk of what we need. But if you look at the member states, you also see we have in many member states, we have housing issues. In many member states, we have issues on social infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Where I mean, in one hand, schools and universities and kindergartens, but also hospitals and other things. So but also this is something which has to be dealt with, and we could be better equipped. So, if you are looking for an agenda in the next MFF or the next European Parliament, it would be good to to move in this direction. And so maybe one could use the experience now collected with EFSI and InvestEU, but one should certainly develop it, because what I hear is that all those stakeholders who are working with InvestEU say that notably everything which goes on investments in innovation and also social purposes, there will be much more much more demand than there is a possibility to finance with a European program as it is.
About 5-6 years ago, there was a debate about the need for a Green Bank of Europe. Do you think this was settled, or there was a missed opportunity? Because I'm sure in the next one year, very few people will advocate a Green Bank for Europe.
I would not have gone for the a Green Bank for Europe, because this makes the issue, this might be a little bit surprising for you, makes the topic smaller than it is. One has to go with full arms on it. So if you have big promotional banks, and the name of KfW is coming from Kreditanstalt für Wiederaufbau, which means
reconstruction.
The topic was a whole reconstruction after the Second World War. And what we have now ahead of us is in this, it's not something little which has to be added. It's in the area of a full societal step forward. Germany has had such a challenge when there was a reunification, and it was quite clear that you don't need a small bank for reunification purposes. You need it full to come in full arms, full gear, whatever you have. And that's why I think, but what makes sense is that this is kind of a general approach of all institutions. And but what I would suggest something separate to make clear that climate investments can be made only with additional investments, also to underpin this additional investment path, to make a kind of, we would call it Klimasondervermögen, which is a little bit separate from the normal budget, to underpin that it is an additional effort for an additional goal.
Is it legal in Germany?
It can be made legal if you go in the direction of loans. If you go and also if you make kind of equity programs, but then it has to be economically viable. So it is legal if not the taxpayers have to pay it, but if those who are the beneficiaries have to pay back either what you have with loans, or if it was with equity, then they have to pay via whatever dividends or sales. In crisis, we are always able to do so. In the Corona crisis, maybe you remember that the German state practically took over Lufthansa, and after the crisis was over, the German state then sold again his shares on Lufthansa, and this is what is now about. So I'm not very much in favor of saying we should go in a race with the US, who can throw more grants on the big companies with the so-called Inflation Reduction Pact. But I think it's better to give them a lot of money, but to expect also a payback after a certain period of time, because this all makes sense when it is going on in the long term economically viable projects.
Understood. I think in Germany, a lot of people know, but outside Germany, there is also a lot of awareness of, let's say, the constraints of investment inside Germany. I think outside, let's be honest, some people refer to underdeveloped broadband, the trains which might be often late, and various other manifestations of not having enough investment in the Federal Republic as a whole. Is there any plan or even a master plan to overcome these bottlenecks which maybe just perceive, but so many people perceive it that there must be some reality behind.
Well, there is very much smoke there, sometimes also some fire. So, yes, from the political point of view, German governments for now relatively long time underestimated the need of investments in the future. So, but a society is never out of investment. And this was also the picture some had in the background, which is what we call Schuldenbremse, debt brake. And this is not very helpful. But it's, on the other hand, it's now the third time in my long life that all the declarations outside are that Germany is a sick man of Europe. And
I didn't say that.
No, you did not say it. But after a while, then things seem to change. Huh? Mm. At least they seem to change in the past. So it's an effort is necessary, and the core of the effort is really an increase in investment. Germany was for too long period of time content with net investment zero, and this is not helpful. Mm-hmm. And so I see now that also with the railways there is a setup of a big investment program, but we have not yet. The definition of this, what I would call this Klimasondervermögen, or like a Marshall Plan on being mm-hmm. on loans. But we need something for 20, 25 years on climate change. And we need something also on innovation in the manner I've described it. And we are not yet there. I hope mm-hmm. we will see a development in this direction.
Mm-hmm. I would like to have a final question, which would be to zoom on a very sensitive question, which is housing. And I think Berlin is a city where there is an enormous experience with trying to solve housing shortages in various ways, trying to tackle housing prices, rents in various ways. And you already addressed this question a little bit from the side of sustainability and basically to change the energy consumption and emission aspects. But I think it's also a matter of quantity. So I wonder if you could share with us in a nutshell a few points which concerns, let's say, the financial side. What it means to the city, but also perhaps above that, the federal state, and for the households. So how can you bring together the interest of these three with some kind of smarter financial solutions?
Nobody will believe it. When I started to work as a European Investment Bank, the prices for flats in Luxembourg were twice as high as in Frankfurt am Main. And these were twice as high as in Berlin. So mm-hmm. we are not anymore in this situation, but this shows a little bit where the city is coming from. There were a lot of plans after the reunification that Berlin would become a city with 5 million inhabitants. And there were a lot of tax deductions to support housing in the environment of Berlin, the so-called Speckgürtel. And Berlin was basically a shrinking city. Mm-hmm. So, and we had the situation that we had in the eastern part of the city, we had only half of the kids going to school than before the reunification. So this is always showing that this picture was completely different. And until 2009, houses were demolished also with state subsidies. So just to reduce the number of flats. So this is now very much different. I think we have now a long-term trend that people are going to the cities, that also people are going to Berlin. And Berlin has also developed, has made a lot of economic progress. So as the capital of Germany, this helps a lot. But it has also developed in its economy on own grounds. And it's now, for the first time since ages, it is over the average in Germany. Yeah? So the GDP per capita is over the average since 4 years. So we have now an urgent need on housing. And what we are lacking most is a consensus in the city that it is like this, because a lot of people still think we are in the shrinking phase. Mm. And why also all these people coming to Berlin are bothering us. Huh? So, but we need, and this has started, we need programs for new housing. And what the market is not providing by its own forces is, unfortunately, housing for, let's say, very much affordable rents. And I think if we are successful, then Berlin at the end has to go a way which is somehow different from London or maybe Paris, that we with an average salary, maybe you will not should not be able to rent a palace, but you should be able to rent a small flat. Mm-hmm. So and this is what we are now trying to do. But giving the financial instruments, it's there is at least we have a consensus that all this is basically done with loans. Huh? Mm-hmm. So because housing is earning money over time. So and our goal is that we do 20,000 new apartments per year. This we don't achieve for the moment, but we try to come closer to it. And 5,000 from this should be social housing. Mm-hmm. And this social housing is for Berlin much cheaper than it is in other cities. Let's say Paris. The idea is that it is around 7 euros, and maybe will go ahead also a little bit with inflation. But it's significantly so the idea for the lower half of the society, if you so mm-hmm. want. And if we can do this, then this could be also helpful for the for other regions and also for other cities, because what I think all big cities have to face is a secular trend that people are moving to the cities. And I think in your home country, Hungary, it's the same.
Mm-hmm. Lots of similarities.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much also for mentioning Hungary at the end. Indeed, it would open a new chapter for our conversation. But I think what you shared is indeed a lot of food for thought about the state of public finance and the capacities of investment in Germany, but also in the European context. If I need to draw some kind of interesting conclusion, I would highlight the point that the name of the game is not to scale back the green agenda, but to find the financial solutions and the financial means to deliver the necessary investment. And when it comes to housing, also, the point is to maintain the ambition to solve burning social questions and indeed organize the financial basis, the financial background accordingly, so that society can indeed appreciate a progressive path of economic and social development in Germany. But let's say this is also something the rest of Europe should also appreciate and work together to share the best examples which we have. Thank you so much, dear Matthias.
Thank you.
And let's also be in touch to follow up on the implementation of some of these policies in the next cycle. Thank you very much.